Let's go!
Welcome back to the Fan Dads Podcast, Fan Dads Assembled. AJ Mansour, Eric Nordquist, and Justin Gard back with you for another episode of the Fan Dads. A different episode, an important episode, a special episode, we'll call it. We have a guest. We don't do a whole lot of guests that are outside the stable, but this one was important, guys. So we brought in an expert, somebody who knows a lot more about this sort of thing, prostate cancer specifically, than any of us could ever pretend to know. September, Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. So let's kick it off real quick right away with an interview with Dr. Somu Suppiah from Minneapolis Radiation Oncology about prostate cancer, the myths, the misconceptions, some info, how you can get screened, when you should get screened, all those things. Let's dive into it right now. Dr. Somu Suppiah, Minneapolis Radiation Oncology. September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. We're ramping up to a big month to bring awareness to prostate cancer, when you should get tested, what the symptoms look like, and we don't know what we're talking about. As most of this podcast goes, we're just a bunch of normal guys living life like you guys are. So what we did today is we reached out to our friends at Methodist and North Memorial Hospital, and we got Dr. Somu Suppiah joining us, a radiation oncology specialist at Methodist and North Memorial. Dr. Somu, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We mentioned at the outset that September is Prostate Cancer Awareness Month. Men typically don't enjoy handling serious medical issues, let alone any medical issues, especially when it turns to themselves. As dads, we're often focused on our kids, taking care of our wives, looking after the loved ones around us. But it is increasingly important. We're both late 30s here, Eric in the middle and myself. It's important as we start to get to this age to start taking care of ourselves and paying attention, especially for things like prostate cancer. Is that correct?
Exactly. I think it's easy for our normal busy lives to kind of get in the way of, you know, screening for things that can potentially help prevent early even death and complications. So that's why screening for any type of cancer is really important.
Hey, doctor, you know, at age 35, and, you know, it's kind of, you know, the screening aspect of it, and I hear kind of 40. Why is 40 kind of like the dedicated line, it feels like the Mendoza line of healthcare, where you get over that and that's when you need to start caring? Like, that feels like, for me, as kind of a rube, an outsider that does not enjoy going to the hospital, that like 40, it's like everything's good until you hit 40 and then everything goes to hell. Like, what makes 40 that age mark?
At least in prostate cancer, you know, screening is very controversial for prostate cancer screening. And I'd say that probably men in their 40s need to be screened if they have a significant family history of prostate cancer or any family history of specific genetic mutations that predisposes them to cancers. And then also African-American men have a much higher incidence of prostate cancer. So I'd say that probably in the 40s, that's probably the target group that needs to be, you know, thinking more about screening. But you could probably stretch it out maybe even into the 50s for people outside of those categories to think about screening. I think part of the reason is that many cancers are a product of aging. So, you know, as we all age, we're more susceptible to various different cancers. And so that, and that's true with many different cancers, whether that be, you know, prostate cancer, colon cancer, et cetera, that it's a product of aging. So even 50 and greater, that the risk becomes more so of developing those cancers.
Hey, doctor, at this age in life as well, are there signs? So it feels like, you know, from a prostate perspective, that, you know, it's typically not until you get checked that maybe you find out some things you never would have known otherwise. But, you know, I think about it like the person that takes two or three bathroom breaks a night, or, you know, somebody, if I have to go to the bathroom at 9:30 and I'm on the radio until noon, I just got to hold it. Like, are there signs that, you know, someone could pick up on, you know, maybe even prior to reaching the age of 40, where they're like, yeah, this ain't good. I got to go see somebody that knows about this.
The thing with prostate cancer is that not everybody actually has symptoms, and the majority are asymptomatic, meaning that they don't have symptoms. And so the, you know, the small percentage of patients that do have, you know, prostate cancer and have symptoms are usually related to urinary issues. So urinating often, or just urgency when you have to go, you got to go, or, you know, frequent nighttime urination, like you mentioned, or rarely, you know, blood in the urine is possible. But, and just because you have those symptoms doesn't mean that you, you know, have prostate cancer. That's another important point to realize. But yeah, the vast majority of patients will not have symptoms. And so that's where, you know, screening with the, you know, PSA, for example, is important.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Tell me more about a PSA, the PSA number, and what that might show from your test results.
Yeah, so PSA stands for prostate-specific antigen. It's basically a protein that's released or produced by the prostate gland, and everybody is, you know, producing it. And it's typically checked with a simple blood test. So that's where it's measured. And, you know, for some people, when they're, it's something that would need to be discussed with your, typically your primary care doctor about the risks and benefits of screening, what we call shared decision-making as to when is the appropriate time to, you know, get a baseline blood test to check the PSA, whether that, you know, like we talked about, in your 40s, or, you know, maybe even into your 50s. And what we're looking for is really trends in the PSA. So, you know, and basically most laboratory studies use a cutoff of about four for a PSA. So if it's higher than that, then that's when we need to talk with typically urologists or surgeons, whether, you know, further evaluation for prostate cancer needs to be done with imaging or biopsies, things like that. And that's kind of the other aspect. You know, there's a multitude of other reasons why the PSA blood test can be high. It's not always due to prostate cancer.
You know, the tough thing I feel for guys like yourself and men and women in the healthcare industry and promoting something like this is, you know, I can go on the internet and I can search up all kinds of things. And I sometimes I feel like I know as much as a doctor, even though that's preposterous. So, you know, what type of information or misinformation do you guys battle against? You know, the things that, you know, general conventional wisdom from the uninformed perspective that you guys really kind of work upstream against in terms of educating and ultimately helping patients?
I think one is probably to do with screening and prostate cancer. It has been such a controversial issue because we obviously don't want to over-treat prostate cancer, or, you know, there are some prostate cancers that can be monitored, or what we call active surveillance, where not all prostate cancers need to be treated. So I think that's where, you know, when we're talking about screening, it's really a conversation with your doctor about the pros and cons of screening, because, you know, once we get one test, you may need to do further workup or biopsies. And then if you get a diagnosis of prostate cancer, then it comes down to, you know, what are the treatment options? And basically, I think probably the misconception being that every prostate cancer needs to be treated. And what we've learned over the years is that there's some, you know, indolent or slow growing prostate cancers that can be what we say active surveillance. They can be closely monitored because that may not really affect that individual's life in their, so thereby where we can prevent them treatment and they won't get the side effects of treatment too. And so they can be safely watched. And our goal is to obviously, you know, closely watch them and then intervene with treatment at the most appropriate time. So I guess one thing is, you know, screening is important, but not every prostate cancer needs to be treated. And that's very dependent on a multitude of factors like the, you know, the patient's age, you know, what type of prostate cancer, how high is the PSA, things like that.
So let's say somebody gets tested. They're 50. They go get the test. They're 40 and they have a family history. They go get the test and there's the PSA levels a little concerning, or something comes back where they may, you know, have prostate cancer. What does the treatment look like, and what are the odds of recovery with a cancer like prostate cancer?
Yeah. So, you know, once you kind of going back to getting an elevated PSA, they'll typically get sometimes imaging and then a biopsy, which typically would confirm whether there's prostate cancer or not. And then that's when they would meet with the doctors that treat prostate cancer. So typically that has been urologists that do surgery. So they would do what's called a radical prostatectomy as one option, which is surgical removal of the prostate. And typically they evaluate the lymph node regions too. The other person or the other treatment option is radiation therapy, which they would typically talk with a radiation oncologist about. And then the third option, which I mentioned earlier, is active surveillance, which is close monitoring with consideration of re-biopsy or checking the PSA down the road. So probably the three options being active surveillance, surgery, or radiation therapy.
My last thing for you, and I can't thank you enough for joining us on our podcast. This is awesome. Again, uninformed guy, not a medical professional. When I hear the word cancer, it's not just about prostate cancer, right? You hear the story about how cancer, it comes, it goes away, it spreads, all these things. I guess, you know, from prostate cancer, I've heard, you know, so many people that have gotten it that the survival rate and or the ability to lead a somewhat normal life, maybe higher with prostate cancer than others. Again, I have no idea. But, you know, if you get prostate cancer, does that mean that now you're suddenly for the rest of your life, or are you looking at other cancers generating from this? Like, you know, in terms of how it connects to other parts of your body and your overall body health, you know, is it an isolated thing or is it all part of the grander system?
So typically in most people, it's an isolated incident in the sense that you're not more likely to develop other cancers. That, you know, that's a small minority of patients where they have some type of specific genetic mutation that predisposes them to other cancers, for example. And that is something, if you have a family history that suggests that there's multiple other cancers and there might be a genetic mutation, that's something that where we would refer you to a geneticist and they would do a genetic test basically to see if you're more likely to get other types of cancer where you do need to be screened closer, for example, pancreas cancer in that example. But the other thing, obviously, with any type of prostate cancer is trying to risk stratify those patients. You know, the kind of there's low risk prostate cancers that can be, you know, closely watched. Then there are other prostate cancers where that may not be recommended and some type of treatment like surgery or radiation therapy would be recommended. And our goal of treatment would be to ideally prevent the spread of this cancer to other areas. Typically prostate cancer, you know, likes to go to the bones, and that's what we're trying to really, you know, prevent spread of this cancer to other areas so that patients can more than likely be, you know, cured and hopefully live as close to normal life as possible as they were prior to being diagnosed. But obviously, you know, it's a very individualized decision, and a lot of it depends on, you know, the stage of their prostate cancer and the grade and things like that as to what the ultimate outcome would be.
Well, Dr. Spaya, thank you for taking time out of your day today, for sharing your expertise, maybe lightening the load, the worry that we may have on something that's just uncomfortable and unknown for us. Thank you for your time. For more information, to learn about prostate cancer, how you can get involved, how you can support, take part in a virtual walk run, you can check out zerocancer.org, get all that information there. And I'll, you know, reach out to your doctor. If you don't have a primary doctor, get a hold of somebody, just start that conversation. that Dr. Supaya helped us kind of start today and learn a little bit more about prostate cancer. So thank you for your time, doctor. We appreciate you looking out for us, and take care of your bodies, guys. All right, welcome back, Fan Dads Podcast. Lots of important information you can get there. Again, zerocancer.org for all the information that we have discussed. And you can learn more about Minneapolis Radiation Oncology online as well. One out of nine men, guys, is going to get diagnosed with prostate cancer at some point in their life. So catching it early is an important thing. I learned a lot. Nordo, Garzi, you're just joining the fray here. Had some car auto-related losses there. You can talk about that later, but Nordo,
I'd rather not.
Doctor.
Yeah, I was, on a serious note, you know, Minneapolis Radiation Oncology, 11 locations in the Twin Cities, learn more about it. So, you know, I jokingly called it basically the Mendoza line of health. Like, it feels like everything in your life, as soon as you hit 40, you got to get figured out. But, we are under 40 at this stage, but if you're near it, or, you know, if there are symptoms and you want to get checked out, you know, earlier the better, obviously. So tremendous, Dr. Supaya. We went to the source for the intel and all of that. Now, the only thing I'm disappointed in is that, you know, we have this long list of myths and misconceptions, and we never got to, and it's an uncomfortable topic. You guys are comfortable with it, but many aren't, is sexual activity. And sexual activity, you know, it's a myth that might lead to increasing your chances of getting prostate cancer. But I wanted to ask him, what about the lack of sexual activity in a marriage? And does that increase your risk for prostate cancer? Because if a lack of sexual activity is, I better go get checked today.
You said it. Yeah, not me. I feel like they would be using, women are using that against us if they're saying, you know, we can't have sex because it might lead to something,
You guys are no fun.
We need to change the narrative.
That tries to joke and say,
we need to change the narrative, or we need to change the narrative around that.
You guys are so, look, we're all going to get yelled at when we get home anyway. We might as well at least have some fun on this freaking podcast. But seriously, though, Minneapolis Radiation Oncology, that was awesome that you set that up at, AJ. That was really cool because, you know, we never have statistics or educated expert opinions on anything here. And so it was about time we had somebody that knows what they're talking about join us.
Brought some credibility to the conversation. Are you guys regular annual doctor visit guys? Like, if you go get an annual physical and take care of yourself, or are you like most men that kind of procrastinate and put that off?
Yeah, I wasn't until I had kids. It's funny how when you have kids, you start thinking about your own health and being around. I haven't been this year, though. I typically go March or April. I need to get in before the end of the year probably, but yeah, it's amazing how you start thinking about, you try to start taking care of yourself. I probably haven't as much as I should, but you try to start taking care of yourself more when you have kids and you start thinking about that a little bit more. And I'm older than you guys. I mean, I'm a year and a half into that. I'm a year and a half out of being 40. So what seemed like so far removed to start thinking about stuff like that, I have to start thinking about that stuff in the next couple of years.
Yeah, and you've never looked better. I
look hideous. I look so bad. The quarantine has been so bad for me.
No, I've lost a ton of weight. I've lost a ton of weight, and I'm still a beached manatee. So
I've lost weight and then put it all back. I mean, that's how long we've been quarantined. It's terrible.
No, the quarantine's terrible.
It's bad.
I'm like you. I didn't start really focusing on my health until I had kids. I mean, I've kind of lived the, you know, what most guys do. It's, you know, if it's bleeding and you can stop the bleeding, you don't have to go to the doctor. Otherwise, you know, it's sick a couple of days. Nowadays with the virus and such, it's like just working through a cold seems like a different endeavor all its own too, upon your perspective. So, but we're getting to that age and, you know, we work with guys on a day-to-day basis who are talking about colonoscopies and all sorts of weird things happening in the back door. So, you know, we're not that far behind, literally or figuratively.
No, but not conversations I'd like to share with them. I don't think we need to compare notes. I'm comfortable in this setting. I'm comfortable in this group. I think we can leave it right there.
Dan's never asked you to accompany him?
No, although I would drive him home because we live close, you know, if I needed to. Because sometimes after these procedures, you're not supposed to drive. We live about We live about 2 miles away, 2 miles apart from each other.
Good to carpool.
2 miles and a few income brackets apart is how I like to say it. I'm on one side of the tracks, he's on the other. But yeah, I would give him a ride if he needed one. I hope he wouldn't be like drugged up and giving me a play-by-play of how things happen, because I don't think we need that for anything. But yeah, I would help out.
Well, I think that's why they have him drive him home, right? Aren't you a little loopy from the meds?
Well, that's what I don't want the truth. So maybe I just drop him off and his wife can handle the aftermath. I don't know.
Hey, instead of David after dentist, it's Dan after dentist. It's perfect.
Do you think when you get a colonoscopy, like you get to save the video?
Are you going to upload it to your YouTube channel?
I don't know. I mean,
trying to go viral.
There's people out there that think about that kind of stuff. It just came to my mind.
Yeah,
I think you're 0-2 on your jokes today. I think you're 0-2. I think it's been a long week for you. I think you spent too much time in the sun at Egan. It's been a long week on the 9 to Noon project.
Yeah. Speaking of constipated, bumper to bumper, weekdays 6:30. My God.
I want you to keep shooting, because you're only one shot away from making us all laugh again.
Oh, and exciting news. Since you guys have zero sense of humor, my kids are going to La Academia in Chaska.
La Academia.
We got the call from the bat phone today.
Muy bien.
Nice.
Yeah, La Spanish Academia. Immersion. Holy cat. So we're pumped about that. I have 3 years of Spanish speaking experience via high school nearly 20 years ago. My wife, you know, the only word she knows is no. So, I mean, that's technically a Spanish word as well.
Yeah. Right.
But it's awesome. I'm pumped. Spanish immersion, 4 days a week in the mix. So we're excited. We're going to get Rosetta Stone, try to keep up with them and learn the lesson plans. But that was, that's my high of the week. It just happened today. The bat phone rang and there were two spots. Didn't have to split them up. Academic excellence, as we've talked about before.
Yeah.
But they're both going. It's really cool.
Are they in the same class or are they different classes now?
Different classes as well.
Nice.
That was
nice.
Kind of the thing for us, you know, as twins, they are together often and will continue to be, but you know, and I don't know if it's the right answer, wrong answer, but kind of the idea of them, you know, they're so good at playing off of each other. Can we get them to kind of learn some independence, some confidence just as individuals versus the tandem? So they'll have different teachers, different class, but they're going to come home and start saying a lot of stuff that mom and dad don't understand. So.
You talk about the code that twins have, this like mental telepathy that they can do already. Now they have a full language that they can just talk behind your back right to your face.
It'll be perfect there.
Is that technically public school then? Or is that private or charter? How does that work?
It's in the same school district down there in Chaska. So. Okay. It's governed by all of the same bits, and it was just the waiting list. Like we were at an elementary school, all set to go, even got the teacher announcements and placements and everything. But the two spots opened up. I know, you know, a lot of kids, and we've talked about it too, you're keeping the kids home or what and whatnot. And, you know, many down in the Chaska area are too, and maybe that plays into things opening up for us. But yeah, it's in the school, it's in the public school district, and it's just a normal elementary school vibe, only they'll be speaking a lot of Spanish.
Nice. I know
we've
had a month straight of I think it's congratulones Nordo, 3 years.
Doesn't sound right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Doesn't sound right.
It's a hot mess up here still. We've had a month straight of school conversations, but that's really what everybody's talking about and what a lot of these dads that listen are also going through right now. Our situation has gotten even messier up here in District 279. Are you guys set, Garzy, or has anything changed since the last couple of weeks, or is it still status quo? Because it's changed a lot up here.
Yeah, well, there's always rumors that it's going to change. As of now, I think we've talked about the plan on the podcast, like the little kids are going. So Jackson's going, the kindergartner is going. We actually just got word that Grayson's preschool is going to open up at 50% capacity as well, which I'm happy about because he's ready to go. Like you talk about Stella and Ava Nordo about like doing their own thing. Like Grayson never went to daycare. He's never been to preschool. Like his, you know, one of his top five friends is a guy that he sees once a year. I think I might've brought this up last year because he just hasn't been able to go out. Like it's just been following
so
his
sheltered.
Older brother. Yeah, and he's ready. Like, he wants to meet people, and he wants to, you know, do school and learn, and he always wants to learn right alongside his older brother. So I'm excited that they're at least going to give it a shot. But we are hearing, like, in our district, like, a lot of teachers still have a lot of questions. And it's not just Minnetonka where we go. I still have a lot of contacts in Edina, obviously, and I've talked to a lot of them. And the teachers are still trying to figure out, like, how it's all going to work. And, you know, they need more paras and they need more people to help them with things. And so we're just kind of winging it and saying, all right, here's the plan. I think they kicked it back a week. Like, they're supposed to start right after Labor Day. It's going to be a week later. But I still think there's a lot of things they need to figure out. So, but the plan is for all of them to go, all the young kids, at least, with the high school kids doing distance learning, and they're using the high school for some other elementary schools and middle schools and stuff like that. But yeah, the plan is they're going to go. So until we're told otherwise, that's our plan too.
So here's the how the last week has been for District 279, Maple Grove, Osseo, Brooklyn Park area. Monday morning, we were set to start school September 8th, which I think this is the day after Labor Day, you know, typical start date for most people. By Tuesday morning, that had been pushed back a week, like you mentioned, Justin, to September 14th, I believe.
Yeah.
Tuesday night, I think I mentioned once upon a time that the school board meeting was pretty dramatic, or so I had heard. Well, we tuned into this one Tuesday night, and we watched a four-hour meeting that didn't get done till 11:30 at night on our phones. And then once the phone died, we threw it to the TV and whatever, we just kind of followed it through. But for 2 hours, they discussed this, the superintendent's plan to have school, you know, or his suggestion, I guess. In some districts, a superintendent is the catch all be all. You make the decision and it is what it is. In this district, he presents his decision or his suggestion to the board, who then votes on it to make it official or not. Great politics, whatever. That's great. Awesome. That has worked for them forever up here. But now on Tuesday, they went 2 hours. He explained his plan, his suggestion, why it was this way, what he thought it was. We don't have enough nurses. There's not enough licensed teachers. There's not enough janitors, not enough PPE. All these concerns that when you throw a bunch of people together, whether they're kids or not, are genuine concerns.
This happened then, on a Wednesday, like a week and a half.
This was a Tuesday. This was this last Tuesday night. So we're a week and a half, 2 weeks out from school starting, first off, like you said.
We're 5 months into this freaking pandemic, right. And now's the time to get...
Right.
Okay, that's BS. That's so. Anyway, yeah, continue, sorry.
2 hours in, I don't know how long a normal school board meeting is, probably an hour to 2 hours, okay? Normal length, they go to vote on this thing. And instead of voting on it, they put a motion forward to split the vote. Three of the five board members did. Almost like they had this trump card in their back pocket the whole time. So they voted on the pushing it back a week, the official start date to the 14th. That was the one of the votes. And the other split vote was the superintendent had suggested that they open the 14th and then do a month of distance learning while they get everything in place and figure everything out in schools. And then like October 14th or something, then they'll go back to the schools. Well, they proceeded then to vote that down. So the two remaining of the five school board members were just pissed. We wasted our entire night. This is why this is ridiculous. This is why here we're going to get voted down, but you guys are just playing the game, blah, blah, blah. So they had to call. They
was that still Tuesday?
That was still Tuesday. So 11:30, they placed this vote. They knew they were going to lose, but they decided to have an update emergency school board meeting Friday morning at 7:30. Because apparently the school districts get their information on a Thursday. So in their district, their cities, what's the infection rate? And if it had gone up, it would be bad news. If it had gone down, it would be bad news. Well, I'm listening to the Power Trip this morning, and Chris Hockey reads off that Minnesota had a record high for infections yesterday through this entire thing.
So yeah, that was backlog data. The testing and stuff, yeah.
Right, and it's backlogging, it's catching up. But that was the data that the superintendent brought to this meeting today.
That's
so accurate. Now... span of 5 days, we have now we're starting on the 14th. We start for 2 weeks of distance learning, and then they consider whether or not to open up the hybrid. It is a hot freaking mess, and nobody feels confident and knows what they're doing up here. Wow. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. How about working families and the kids themselves that are, you know, they've spent probably what, the better part of a month acknowledging some sort of start date, some sort of process.
For sure.
Regardless of whether they agreed with it, they have acknowledged, accepted it, and are ready to get going. And now your school board, superintendent, board members, just L's. That's unbelievable how terrible that system is going on up there.
I think it's something like 30% of the district is doing the distance learning. That doesn't factor in whoever chose to homeschool, but there's different problems that arise. We waited to this point, and if somebody's going to pull their kid to do homeschooling or whatever, we've run into the problem where you can't get the curriculum right now because they typically print for the small percentage of families that homeschool. And now there's a quarter of the population that's choosing to homeschool, and they can't get enough books and curriculum printed. So they're going through their own, that industry, if you will, is going through their own problems right now. So it's just, it's messy. And I don't know, I feel like we had enough time to plan better. I'm not saying we had that solution, but it had to have been better than this.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm hoping that these saliva tests that we're hearing about, you know, that are popping up everywhere, that to me is going to be helpful. Because they're cheap. Like, you can, parents can either pay for them, districts can pay for them, colleges can pay for them, leagues are obviously going to pay for them. Like, I think that would give everybody more peace of mind, right? That would make it a lot easier for teachers and administrators and everything to say, okay, I feel good about going here, I feel good about doing this, because that's what's holding them back, right? At least on the teacher side. I know there's a lot of teachers that are like, I don't feel super comfortable about it. It's like, okay, don't go. Okay, well then who are you replacing them with?
Right.
Like, there's just, it's a mess. Yeah, it's a mess. It's a disaster.
Yeah, and even in fairness to 279, there's got to be, what, five high schools? I mean, that's a bleep. There is a bleep ton of kids up there. So
yeah,
it's a big district.
It's 75,000 people in the city. Maple Grove, what, like $130? I mean, they got enough people up there.
Yep.
I think even parts of Plymouth go there. I mean, I get it. It's a cluster. It's obnoxious, though, because at some point, And maybe it just shows a general lack of confidence, as JG's saying, with the process. But you have to commit to a process, because mom and dad either have committed to keeping the kids home, great, or they've committed to trying to have a freaking job to pay for all of the things they need for little Johnny and Susie. So
yeah,
it sounds like maybe for now that the distance bit, that's their thing. But the testing, I like it. You know, what is it, $10 a test, I think, with the saliva
on average
thing?
Yeah, something like that.
And but how quickly do these things return? Like,
I think it's 24 hours.
The Timberwolves doctor I had on a couple of weeks ago, Robbie Sika, said at worst it would be a day.
Yeah.
Which that's, but that could allow, and that's what he said. He goes, part of the reason we started this back in April is because we all want schools to open. Like, everybody understands how important it is for schools to open, but whether you agree with it or not, they're not going to open until they have the right peace of mind, you know, behind all of that, at least in a lot of the districts. So if they could figure that out, and at worst it's 24 hours, I mean, that really would help with the screening and knowing that, hey, these people here are safe. You're safe when you do this. You're safe when you go there. And, you know, it's 90%, you know, success rate in terms of the test being accurate. And that's hopefully what they can figure out here in the next couple of weeks or couple of months.
You know, it's amazing, though, and this is not an indictment of the saliva test or anything. I love the innovation of it, and so I'm pumped for that to hopefully work out and become a standard. But the lack of standardization with these tests, as we look at it in the sports world, what a disaster. You know, just in the NBA, just some crappy lab in Jersey almost set the NFL on fire with these 77 false positives. In baseball, it was Juan Soto of the Nats that kept testing negative, then positive, then negative, then positive, ended up missing like 9 games, and he didn't have it. And so it's like, you know, in these cases, what I'm worried about is, and I'm sure they're on top of it, they're way smarter than me. That's why we had a doctor on to talk about it, you know, our prostates. But, you know, I hope that as you're trying to run so fast to bringing down the wait time, that you're actually also focused on raising the accuracy and the viability of these tests. And so, you know, this saliva thing, like, it's not like it's a done deal as soon as the FDA stamps it that now it's open and shut, right? I mean, they still got to work on, you know, making sure that 90% accuracy becomes a 99% accuracy.
Right.
And medicine's not meant to move this quickly. I mean, how many illnesses have we been raising money for and dealing with forever and ever and ever, right? I mean, it's not used to jump starting and saying, hey, we got 6 months, let's figure it out. So I think it's amazing that in 4 or 5 months they've figured out as much as they have. And hopefully they can get us across the finish line here.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's end on a fun note. Any fun plans for the weekend? You guys doing any last before school starts, vacations coming up, anything on the horizon?
Any books, Nordo? Any books you're trying to read this weekend? It's good for your prostate. It's what I heard. I didn't hear the doctor, but I heard it's good for your prostate. So it might be a nice arrow in your quiver there if you're looking to read a book this weekend.
Arrow in the quiver. Interesting way to put things. No. Definitely no books this. Oh, that one gotcha. Okay, just calm down. Don't humor me with your crappy laugh. Honestly, my God. No, I'm not doing anything. Hey, I'm doing the noon to two show with Saucy on Saturday.
Nice.
Dad might come down and check out the pad. So that's nice. It, man. For me, prior to, you know, in addition to like managing mood swings 9 to noon, and I'm just trying to chill until this football season thing kicks off, and hopefully we're busy in a good way, you know, crossing fingers that things keep on the tracks of the NFL. So,
Boys, tomorrow, my baby turns 6. Our oldest boy turns 6 tomorrow. We have
Happy
a 6-year-old.
Birthday.
The Jackman turns 6. That's hard to believe, which means Mac's about to turn 6 here pretty quickly, right? In the next
October.
Couple months.
Yep.
And so, we've got a 6-year-old, and then we've got a 2-year-old because Jilly's birthday is on Sunday. So we've got the Saturday-Sunday birthday duo. One thing we could talk about maybe next week too, when we have more time, is it's very difficult for Grayson, whose birthday is in November, who's had to deal with basically like 2 weekends of birthdays for, because we did something with my in-laws a couple of weeks ago, because we have a nephew whose birthday is the 29th. So all these presents, all this pomp and circumstance. And then there's poor little November 15th gray baby who does not get to be a part of it with his brother and sister. And as I've told you, he is the big brother. He is the brother that everybody should have in their life. He is a wonderful sibling. My oldest and youngest are not. Jackson is not a good brother, especially to his younger brother. He has flashes, but so Grayson takes it very hard. Like, he's so excited for his brother to get presents and his sister to get presents, but he's trying to figure out where his presents are, which means we've had to sneak a couple in for him.
Right.
And he was so pumped when he got the Mighty Pup Sky thing that he said that he wanted, but it's been a little heartbreaking because Grayson loves everybody. He's happy for everybody, but you can tell he's taking it hard that it's not his birthday yet.
Right.
And he wore for his brother and sister's party last weekend, he wore the shirt that he wore to his birthday party last year in November. He said, "Can I wear my birthday party shirt?" And I said, "Sure, buddy." You know, and it barely fits him because he's almost 4 now. So it's like this skin tight, you know, to quote Sauce, he looks like a mammoth muffin from Perkins, you know, putting on this shirt that he wore when he just turned 3. But that's what we're dealing with, is it's going to be a thing for a while with his brother and sister having a birthday the same weekend, basically every year.
Yeah.
And he's just going to be the guy left for a couple of months trying to figure out where his presents are.
Yeah. Yeah. It happens to the best of them. And he's right in that age too, where you don't fully understand.
No.
Yeah.
He's trying to figure out where his presents are, when his party is, all that stuff. I'm like, buddy, you get your own. And so we watched his video of us singing happy birthday to him like 50 times from back in November of 2019.
There you go. You got it figured out. Special thanks again to Minneapolis Radiation Oncology, 11 locations, the largest provider of all radiation therapies in the Twin Cities. Thanks to Dr. Somusopaya and his time as well. Get yourself checked, talk to your doctor, and get that PSA level settled, and then track it as we go. See you later. This is the Fan Dads Podcast. You can find old episodes of Fan Dads on iHeartRadio, iTunes, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We'll see you next week.